You're exactly along the right lines. He's exactly along the right lines. Typically, when this word was first used, it was applied to the steam engine. And a steam engine might be a steam engine in a factory that would operate machines in the factory, or it might be aboard a locomotive to propel a train, or it might be aboard a ship to propel the ship. And the person who ran the machine, those machines were complicated, and they were specific, and it was knowledge that not the average person had, because they were new. And so the person who operated the engine was an operating engineer. And with the steam engine, he would have to keep track of the fire and be sure it was not too hot, or that it was not hot enough, be sure that the pressure was right, be sure that the right combination of valves were open, watch gauges, all of that kind of stuff. It was a complicated task to run a steam engine and keep the thing from blowing up or stopping or doing all kinds of things that might be undesirable. So the person who ran the engine was an operating engineer. Then the person who designed the steam engine, who made it, was a design engineer. And in our culture now, we have put a lot more effort on the design side of things, so that when you operate, for example, an automobile, it's fairly simple. There are standards. The accelerator pedal is to the right of the brake pedal, and you expect to have both of those pieces of equipment there, and a steering wheel. And driving a car is pretty much the same with all the cars because of the ways we have engineered it and standardized that. And we don't really have to worry too much about how the engine works. You put the key in, you turn it, it starts, put it in gear, and you go. So we don't really, it's not as complicated a task to operate the mechanical mechanism. So we've dropped that term engineer for the driver, except in trains, we still keep that term, and we still apply the term for the designers of machines, and now that term has been expanded to even things that have no moving parts, such as electrical circuits. An electrical engineer may design something and you don't see anything move, but yet it still accomplishes a task. Okay, good. So that's how those two words that came from the actual engine, an operating engineer versus a design engineer, and we sort of dropped design, the modifiers design and operating, and we call them both engineers. Okay, today's trivia question is from a statement that I made yesterday, and I think everybody understood it, but that's just an assumption on my part, so we'll make it the trivia question, and we'll let you answer it tomorrow to see if you really did understand it or not. Yesterday I made the statement, something along the lines, that it is impossible to sing without inspiration, but yet, in fact, when you are singing, you are expiring. Okay? And what is it that I really mean by that? And am I talking gibberish, or am I, you know, getting a little too charismatic, or what's going on here? What do I mean by that? I'll let you think about that, and I'll ask the question again. I made the statement, it is impossible to sing without inspiration, yet when you are singing, you are expiring. What is it that I mean by that? Okay. Any questions about anything we covered yesterday? Something that we did that maybe not have been clear? Okay, let's press on then. Yes, go ahead. The two clefs. Okay. The one that looks kind of like a little S. A letter? Okay, yeah. The one that looks like an S, is called a treble clef or the G clef, because that little circle part of the thing that looks like an S, it really was a G, encircles the second line from the bottom, which is the line on which we place the note G. The bass clef, kind of like a backwards C with two dots, it's called the bass clef or the F clef, and the two dots are on each side of the fourth line from the bottom of the staff, which is the line on which we place the note F. So the bass clef is the F clef, the treble clef is the G clef. By the way, there are other clefs that we use. And it used to be practiced to even move the clefs, put them on a different line. The treble, the G clef was still a G clef, but you might put it on a different line. For example, one way of making an alto clef would be to move the treble clef up one line so that G is on the middle line of the staff. That's not the way we typically make an alto clef anymore. We typically will use a C clef, but that is an alternate way to do that. Okay. Now let me think that it, let me be sure I said that right. I'm going to have to think about, I don't want to spend more time thinking about that. Let me use a better example that I know I'm certain of. A baritone clef. A baritone clef, take the bass clef, move it down one line. I know that the treble clef can be moved. I'm uncertain of moving it up one line gives you the alto. I'm going to retract that because I think that was wrong. Typically, we don't move either of those clefs anymore. So it's not a common thing, and I have to rethink it. Is that what we do? I know moving the bass clef down one line would produce a baritone clef, so then the middle line becomes F. For the alto? Okay. Well, yeah, but so then moving the treble clef doesn't accomplish that. That would put G as the middle line. That's why I don't like that notion. With the C clef, you can put the C as the middle line of the staff. Right. And tenor clef, one line up. Tenor clef, one line up. The fourth line. Then C. Anyway, that's more than we need to know. Go who? What now? The appetizers? I'm sure there's something funny in this. You know what? Don't worry about it. You got the F clef guy thing? You got the C the G clef thing? That's all you need. The rest of it was my mumblings. Forgive me. Okay, breathing. We did do this yesterday. Let's think about it again today. The idea is to have the posture straight, particularly the back, neck, head, which automatically keeps the chest high. Now you don't force it high, you just let it be high naturally. Nice and relaxed, arms relaxed, neck relaxed, no tension there. Tension is here, okay? And if you like to do the two-hand method, so sit up. We'll let you sit for the moment, sit up. One hand here, one hand here. Okay, breathe in and then out. Breathe it all out, hold it. Ready, inhale. And this should move, okay? That's the notion. The motion is here, not here. Okay? All right. Let's sing Jesus Loves Me and think about that as you're doing it. We'll hold the end of phrases again like we did yesterday. Jesus, don't be so, here we go. Ready? Three.
Jesus loves me, this I know.
Early this morning, someone said, what if I need a breath in between? Okay? Since we are singing chorally, that means all together, you can really breathe anytime you want to. natural places to breathe are at the end of phrases. But if you need to breathe in between and get a little catchphrase, if you're doing the breathing right, where the chest is high, you can just do a breath like that and you're ready to go again. For example, the last phrase of that, "They are weak, but he is strong," okay? Let's say you needed a breath in there. So, "They are weak, but he is strong." Not a problem. And the breath comes quickly. If you have to do like that, it takes a long time to do that. You can't get a catch breath that way. But if you're already set up for it, just relax it in essence, and you're ready to go again. It's almost a relaxing of the abdomen area, and you have the breath. Okay? All right. Now, let's talk today about the vocal apparatus. This, the thing in here, the voice box, the vocal cords, the vocal folds. We don't have a lot of control. Well, this is a little trickier mechanism to control than the breathing. The notion here is, well, first of all, let's talk about neck, face, that kind of stuff. If you are tall, standing or sitting erect, these muscles can be very relaxed. You do not need a lot, you don't need any tension in the neck or in the face. Sometimes you can tell how much tension a singer has just by watching their face. You know? Particularly on a high note. The chin goes up, the neck gets tight, the face goes weird, you know? And all of that will make it harder, although it may be a natural inclination, particularly when the notes get high. You know, you want to get up there with those notes. And we want to resist that. At first, although we can have facial expressions, but the facial expressions can really be independent of the vocal mechanism here. So the way I like to think of making them independent is first just concentrate on keeping the face bland, relaxed and bland, the jaw loose, the face calm, no frowning, no, you know, any of that, the neck nice and loose. Okay? And then, along with that, particularly this area needs to be nice and loose. Now, there is a vocal technique, some people don't like it, where you can insert your fingers basically above where your Adam's apple would be, only to the side. And you can make a big space in here. And when you have the space in here, your voice sounds really big. If someone would like to, for me to demonstrate, I can take your index fingers and put them here in my throat. And typically what happens when I do this, because there's no space, and then, because I've worked at controlling these muscles some, and then there's a space and the people go, ugh! You know, like it's really gross. It's like surgery, only everything's still closed up. So be forewarned if you do this, but I think it may be worth some of you, me going around and you seeing what I'm talking about, actually feeling in my voice what I'm talking about. So, who's going to be volunteer to have me put your fingers in my throat? Okay, Helen. Okay. So let me take your index fingers, okay? And let's face each other, this is hybrid. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to put my fingers right here, so you see that little bump, and now there's a space there, and now there isn't. Where there's a space, it's nice and big and open, and that's the way we want to be able to see. Feel the difference? Okay? Who else would like to feel? Well, come on, it's fun. Okay, go up and like the deal. Let's have a few more. All right, Janice.
And afterwards, if you want to demonstrate, yeah. Okay. Right there. All right. Anyone else? Marvin. Okay. Okay, so there's a little ridge here, and then right above that, you can relax this and get your fingers in there, make it nice and open. All of a sudden, it's real bit south, and I'm not really talking any differently. Okay? All right.
Now, you would look funny singing like this all the time. So this is a practice technique, not a performance technique. But the notion is, and I even know of some vocal instructors that have their students work on almost forcing this down, particularly on the high notes. I'm not sure that that's always the best way. And the idea is to be able to voluntarily control this without having to force it physically. But technique is there, so keep that in mind. Now, so as we sing, this is very, by the way, when there's this space in here, this thing's really relaxed. I can move it all around. And if we can keep this nice and open and relaxed, we're going to have a nice, big, full sound. Okay, now, what we're going to do, breathing is the same. We're just going to do some solfege exercises here, and I want you to concentrate on a bunch of things now. The posture, the breathing from here, face nice and relaxed, neck, all of that nice and relaxed, and particularly this area nice and relaxed. Keep the jaw nice and relaxed, and maybe even open a lot. Okay? Now we actually have to be able to pronounce consonants with this, so the dog moves. It's okay if it's in my desk, really. Okay, and we'll sing some solfege. Solfege, do I need fa sol la ti do? Okay, we'll go from do to sol and back down. Okay, it'll be like this. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, down. Excuse me. Sol, fa, mi, re. Concentrate on getting this nice and big, this nice and relaxed. Ready? Here we go. Do, re, mi, fa, sol. Sol, fa, mi, re, do. Okay, now, the high notes. The high notes, don't think high. Think low. In fact, there is a technique, and I'm going to ask you to do this for practice today. Point down. The higher you're going, point down. Think down. You want this to be down and open and relaxed. I'm going to go all the way up to do this time.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Now, it sounds kind of weird because it actually does modify the sound when I physically move this, but this is really relaxed.
Ti, do.
And I have lots more volume left. I could get much louder than that. With no strain on the vocal mechanism, and if I were the opera singer, the guy in the back row who paid his ticket to would be able to hear over the orchestra. Okay? As long as this is relaxed, you're not going to hurt it. And you'll get, as long as it's nice and open, you get, potentially, if you want it, tons of volume without hurting the mechanism. With a big, full, rich sound. Okay? Do that with me. We'll go that far. Go re mi fa sol la ti do, and then we'll start at the top and go down. And as we go to the top, think, you know, do your finger like this. And as soon as the higher you go,
The lower you're pointing that finger, okay? Think down to go up. It helps to keep this down and open. And you can put another hand here if that'll help you too. Okay? Ready? Here we go.
Go.
To think about, but that in summary is the essence of proper vocal production. So that's what we're going to be thinking about the whole time we're singing now, all of this stuff. Any questions on anything that I've covered thus far? Anything that I've said along these lines that is not clear or needs to be said in different ways? Or maybe you disagree with? Yes. Yes. If this can be relaxed, this is a huge muscle. These muscles are small and delicate, and they are not strong. This muscle has lots of guts to it. Isn't our language fun? This muscle is huge and has lots of strength. So let the strong muscle do the work. And this muscle does the fine tuning for us. But if we can keep this loose and open, you can sing as loud as you want, you can sing as long as you want, literally. Now, how long is an opera? 2 hours? And they're doing some pretty challenging stuff sometimes. You know? But the good opera singer, you know, maybe they can do a matinee and an evening performance and still be fine. Yeah. Now, we don't necessarily have to sing opera, but that style serves us well in all kinds of music. You can sing any style, but if the vocal production technique is correct, then it's just a matter, you know, maybe you slide a little bit on a Western, a country Western type song, or, you know, the styles are different, and you can still do all of that with this vocal production technique. Okay, good question. Other questions or concerns? Okay, the question is, how do you break yourself from the habit of breathing, you know, doing this instead of breathing from here? The best way is just to practice sitting or standing tall all the time. Start with that. That, maybe in my mind, it may be different for different, but in my mind, 75% of the work is already done if you can keep the chest tight. So, and our... Sometimes the way our seats are, that doesn't necessarily encourage that. So if it will help you, sit on the front edge of your chair. Or if you want to stand, stand.
This also works for speaking. People that lose their voices at a ball game, shouting all the way through, if they would open up and not tighten up, they wouldn't have their voice gone by the end of the game.
Right. Good point. Did everyone hear that? I remember years ago, my choir teacher in high school, this was in the days before good amplification or any amplification system for cheerleaders. So they'd have the big cone thing that would be the megaphone, no electrical amplification in it, just, you know, speak through the big cone. And they were complaining, the cheerleaders were complaining that their voices were hurting by the end of the football game. And so he brought them all in and instructed them how to yell correctly, how to shout correctly using this technique. And they found that it was way better. They could shout out the cheers and still feel fine at the end of the game.
Ellen? You talked about standing. Is that the reason most choirs are standing rather than sitting?
That's a good part of it, yes. Yes. They'll get a fuller sound. Just, you know, particularly if you can stand with good posture, you're set to go. Best would be lying down on a flat surface. typically, like I showed you yesterday, completely flat, no elevation, but typically there's just not room, and that's kind of a weird, you know, could you imagine going to see a professional fire and everybody's lying down flat? You've got a low seat, you know, and at the front row, you can't even see them. Anyway, but yeah, stand. Other than lying flat, standing straight would be the best thing. Let's go ahead and stand, since we're talking about that, and let's do this with whatever song I said we were going to do it with. 338. Now, the chorus of this song has an octave jump at the beginning. Let's look at the chorus. Let's see, that's the term I used yesterday. What's an octave? Seven steps apart. Eight notes apart, if you count the first note as one of them. We could also say, I used other terms like third and fourth. We could call it an eighth, but for some reason we call it an octave when we get to the eighth one. I don't know why. Maybe that'll be tomorrow's trivia question. No, because I don't even know the answer to that. But instead of calling it the eighth step, we call it the octave. Okay? We have an octave jump in the chorus. Huh? Well, yeah, I know why eight means octave. But since we call the first, we call it the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, why don't we call the next one eighth? I don't know why we call it octave instead of eighth. Could be. Anyway. We have an octave jump there, so E flat to E flat, okay? And with the jumps, so we got to be careful because, you know, we worked our way up to the, okay? And now we're just going to nail it. So it should be something like, well, I'm going to pitch it a little lower at first. Listen, so it'll be like this. But I know whom I have believed. But I know whom. So do that. Okay? Point to it. Point down. But I know whom. Point hard. Okay? Some of you. No. Almost like you got a spade here. You're digging into hard ground, okay? Tension here, no tension here, okay? All right, everybody with me, ready? Ready? We'll do it.
But I know whom I have believed one, and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I committed.
This takes a while. Somebody got a pitch pipe handy? Faster than this warms up?
One
on the podium.
Either on or under the podium. One here. Here we go.
I should have been more prepared again. Okay.
What I know.
Different, huh? That's where it really belongs, okay? Here we go.
Do. But I know I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I committed unto him.
All right, you may be seated. Thanks for pitch fight. Now this is warmed up. Okay, the Elijah song. Have that out, please. Let's do that. Elijah, the Elijah song. Okay, sit tall. The knee doesn't go away just because we're sitting. Sit tall, keep it nice and loose. Face bland. Once you get the notion of the face being relaxed, then add expression to it, like friendly expression, because we are communicating and teaching one another. But don't let the expression be the pain of your singing. Okay? Did you get a copy? They didn't raise their hands, but I'm certain they need a copy. Okay, who's going to get you another copy? Who else needs a copy? Raise your hand. We'll go ahead and start singing, but they'll see to it. Keep your hands up until you get a copy. Don't be so. It's five verses long, so you probably get the copy before the last verse. Here we go. We'll do all five verses straight through. Nothing special. Just think about what we've been doing. Ready? Here we go.
There was a man of God who lived a long, long time ago, who told the king there's no more rain and as I say so, to show the king that he was strong, that God indeed does reign. Elijah, Elijah, Elijah was his name. On Bibles that this prophet stood to prove which God was true, for there was false's prophets life and fire they could not do. Then this man prayed and fire came down and everybody knew. Elijah, Elijah, the prophet brave and true. Elijah prayed and rain came down upon the thirsty ground. But Ahab's wife said he'd be dead if only he were found. For 40 days he traveled on to find a place to hide. Elijah, Elijah, fear not, God's on your side. Go tell Ahab that they have sinned and they shall surely die.
Keep going.
For Jezebel has made the plan and stolen with a lie. And they have killed a very good man and taken what he had. Elijah, Elijah, they surely have been mad. Now God would take this man to heaven in such a splendid way. His work was done, he had been true, this was his happy day. God sent his fiery chariot down and swept him to the sky. Elijah, Elijah, he did not have to die.
And reminder, all these handouts are yours to keep, okay? Now, I did not check with Ken about copyright issues, so if he wants to copyright that, that's fine. I can't imagine that he would have a problem with each of you having a copy. But if he wants to copyright it, typically, even once a piece is copyrighted, as long as the author gives permission, that shouldn't be a problem. Okay. Yesterday, we talked a bit about, let's go ahead and do a quick review of seventh chords. Yesterday, these are the notes that we took, and we started off with the treble clef. Encircling the line on which we place G, and then from there we alternate as we go up, forward through the alphabet, alternating space, line, space, line, space, line, forward through the alphabet. Once we get to G, we start over again at A. If we go down in pitch, we go backwards through the alphabet as we label our notes, as we give them names. letter names. We do the same thing with the bass clef. The two dots of the bass clef are on each side of the line on which the note F is placed, so we also call it the F clef. So this fourth line from the bottom of the staff is F. As we go up, we go forward through the alphabet. As we go down in pitch, we go backwards through the alphabet, alternating space and line. And we did mention yesterday that it just so happens that this note C, the first on the first line above the bass clef, is the exact same pitch as this note C, the first line below the treble clef. We call that middle C. Typically, the bass clef are the low notes. A man's voice is typically about an octave lower than a woman's voice. And so we put the men's part on the bass clef. And the treble clef is the high notes. The women's voices, or boys whose voice has not yet changed. And we put those notes on the treble clef. When we combine them together, on the staff with the treble clef, when we combine the two staves together, staves is the plural of staff. The staff is just the five parallel lines. When we combine the two staves together, we call this a grand staff. We often bracket it together, so we know that these two go together. They're sung simultaneously. And this is the way our music is typically set up in our hymnals, with the tenor and bass part, the men's parts, written here, with the soprano and alto parts, the women's parts, written here. Then yesterday we talked about the G major minor 7 chord, the G dominant 7 chord. It's made up of, and I misspoke yesterday, I said 4/3 make a seventh, and that's not really right. It's 3/3 make a seventh. It makes four notes, but each of these notes are a third, so there are three intervals of a third. There's 1/3, let me get this thing to point with. From the G to the B is 1/3. From the B to the D is 1/3. From the D to the F is 1/3. That makes 3/3. And the total distance is a seventh. The total interval is a seventh. And remember, when we name intervals, these are ordinal, and we always start with, we count as one, the starting note. So from G to B, G, A, B is three notes. G, A, B, that's a third. From B to D, B, C, D, that's three notes. That's a third. From D to F, D, E, F, that's a third. Okay, it's a counting system. It's three notes apart, although we count one as one of them. Then three of those put together, stacked as they are, from the low one G to the top one F is a seven. G, A, B, C, D, E, F makes a seven. Okay? So 3/3 make a seven. Now, thirds are easy to see when they're on the same staff, when they're in root position, because they stack one right on top of the other. If the bottom one is on a space, all of them will be on spaces. If the bottom one is on a line, you know, the next third above is the next line, and the next third above that is the next line. Okay? And they stack and they make what we call snowmen. Snowmen is not a musical term. Okay? But they make snowmen. And the seventh chord here with four notes makes a four-ball snowman, all stacked nicely upon one another. What happens, however, when we take this G and raise it an octave to here, our snowman doesn't look like a snowman anymore. We no longer have a third here. That distance is just a second from F to G, because they're right next to each other, F, G. We now have a second. So the seventh chord, by nature, produces the interval of a second. In fact, we call a seventh and a second inverse intervals, because you can go up seven from G to F, G, A, B, C, D, E, F. You go up, you get the seventh. You go down from G to the same F, or F to another octave, G to F, down, is a second. Okay? Yes. The intervals of a seventh and a second are what we call inverse intervals. Going up seven steps, going up the interval of a seventh is the same as going down the interval of a second. But you might have the S an octave apart. Yeah. But it's still an F. And it still sounds like an F. Okay? Yes?
You mentioned yesterday, for those who aren't here, this is not like the measure of stuff.
Correct.
But it's the number.
Correct. The, right. The term third here does not mean 1/3, the fraction 1/3. It's an ordinal, like the, you know, this was the first person line, the second person line, the third person line. This is the third note in this counting system. The first being, let's say, G, G, A, B. It's the third note, so it's an ordinal system, yes. Not a fraction, although we do use fractions in music too, but not for this. Okay, now, that interval of a second or seventh even produces a very, it produces a tension sound for us. Sam, can I ask you to come up, please, and we'll try this again? And we were looking at the song 239. 239. 239 is what I want. We have four songbooks at our congregation now, and we use all four, and I've given up on trying to remember the numbers. And so, forgive me if I seem peace, perfect peace. Okay? 239. It's there. That's what we were just talking about. 239. Okay. You want to do the soprano part this time? And can you get this note right this time, please?
I'm sorry. Okay.
But you know what you're doing now?
Okay.
Now, Sam is going to sing the... Here, let's get this song up here. I have it here.
See what that looks like. And let's see what that looks like. A little big. It fits. Okay. Now,
Sam is going to sing the soprano part. The way our music is organized, there are four notes that are sung simultaneously. Bass, the lowest note, tenor, alto, and soprano. Sam is going to sing the soprano line. So these notes, the ones I'm pointing to right now, the top note of every one here. And I'm going to sing the alto line, these right here. Before we do, let's have you identify. What's the interval?
Third.
See how it's like snowmen? This one's on a line, this one's on the next line. That's a third. What's the interval?
Second.
What's the interval?
Second.
Third.
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 Second.
Third. So all we have are seconds and thirds between those two parts. Which one you think sounds nicer? Which one do you think will sound nicer? The third. Which one you think will give us tension? The second. Let's see if we can demonstrate that with some degree of reliability. No. I'm sorry. No. No. Let's hold the ones that have seconds to it. Okay? No. Here we go. Okay. I don't know how you feel about that.
think that's really cool. The composer here, using the method of the seventh chord, has purposely thrown in just a little bit of a tension, and then the tension relaxes to the third that we like. And we even have a parallel third. A parallel third is when one chord is a third, and then the next one right after it is a third. But maybe they've moved. Like, look here. A third here, going to a third here. That's parallel thirds. We like, we don't want to go crazy with parallel thirds, because then it can really sound almost silly. But we like parallel thirds. Okay? But we don't like the second. But all of those seconds resolve to thirds. From a tension to a relaxing. And it provides interest in this song. If you're just singing the soprano part, this song can sound very boring. Peace, and this song will not stand. Some people go, what a yawn. Okay? The interest here is not in this melody line. The interest is in what they're doing with the harmonies. And the altos, with their dissonance there, with their second there, provide us the interest. I like this song a lot, and I hope I can not ruin it for you too. Okay, let's have everyone. Thank you, Sam. You can sit there. Let's have everyone sing the soprano part, just the soprano part, and we'll sing the entire first verse of the soprano part. Everybody together on just soprano part. Do mi sol. And everything's the same. You know, sit tall, this is loose, this is tight, this is high. All right, ready? Here we go.
He's perfect, he's in this dark world of sin. The blood of Jesus whispers peace within.
Okay. Now let's have everybody sing the alto part. We don't often do this, but I think it's good for you to know what the other parts are going to sound like. Even if you don't sing alto, let's have us all sing together the alto part right now. Do, e, here we go.
Thank you.
one more time. Can we purposely hold the seconds there? Just to, so you get, because sometimes we want to, we're uncomfortable with singing that second. We want to force it into a third. And if it's too short in time, sometimes you just do that and go on. Okay? So we're going to hold the seconds on purpose so you can get comfortable with the idea of clashing there a little bit. Okay?
Do, pi, alto, sol, soprano.
And the guy's parts into it. But if you miss that, you know, you're missing a lot of the beauty of this song. Okay? Let's have everyone sing the tenor. Everyone sing the tenor.
Do mi sol, do.
That's the tenor part. Here we go. Ready? To the other things that are going on there. So enjoy what the other parts are doing. Okay? Okay, let's have all three together.
Do, mi, sol, mi, alto, sol, soprano.
Hold the tenor stick. Here we go. No, I don't sing it all. Just listen. Ready? Go. Let me warn you, from the last note of the first line to the first note of the second line, we have a minor seventh interval. Do, do, si, sol, la, si, fa, si, fa, fa, si, fa, si, fa. Okay? And what interval does it produce with the tenor? A second. Okay? All right. Everyone bass part.
No.
Perfect. Easy. Here we go.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got the octave jump there. He's within. The low notes take longer to speak. Now, most basses have adjusted to that, and they just start singing a tad bit earlier, okay? But realize that you're going to have to give some time to that. And also, often the low notes are harder to give with volume. So upper parts, don't drown them out. Be sure you can hear that nice full low G there, second to the last note. Okay? All right, all four parts.
Do, we can click a little bit, all four parts. Do, bass, alto, soprano,
I'll listen. By the way, tomorrow we may begin some songs in the Blue Songbook, and I believe they're going to procure more of those so that we'll have them. Yeah. 505. We won't go too fast then the first time through. Okay? We'll just sing it. Okay? Notice there is a time signature change. We start at 9/8 and we change then to 12/8 for the chorus.
Do so. Oh, scatter the seeds of loving needs along the fertile field. For grain will grow from what we sow, and fruit will harvest year. Then day by day, along the way, the seeds of prosperous hands have ripened grain from hill and plain.
Sounded pretty good. The chorus, rhythmically, particularly the response part. Okay? Here's how it goes. Sounded like many of you had it, but just listen for this time through. So soprano goes, then day by day, along your way, the seeds of promise cast.
That's kind of the tricky part. The seeds of promise cast, the seeds of promise cast. Okay, that's how that goes. Continuing on. That ripe and grain from hill and plain, from hill and plain, be gathered home at last, be gathered home at last, for tenor and alto. Okay? Let's have just the counterpart, speak your rhythms. Speak your rhythms, okay? Not the soprano, everybody but soprano. Okay? And I'll sort of switch off between the two. So it's something like this. Here we go. Then day by day, then day by day, along your way, along your way, the seeds of promise, the seeds of promise cast, the seeds of promise cast, that ripe and grain,
that ripe and grain,
from hill and plain,
from hill and plain,
be gathered home at last, be gathered home at last. Okay, let's take just the chorus. One time. Is that? We are. It'll be tomorrow. Thank you. You got some to practice. The seeds of life and grain of the seeds of life.